Back in 1961, an interesting book was published. The name of the book is Black Like Me. Then in 1964, more than 50 years ago, a movie version of this book was published, or produced. If you're not familiar with either the movie or the book, Black Like Me, let me give you a quick overview. There was a journalist by the name of John Griffin, and this man decided at some point in his life that he was going to change his skin color. He was a light-skinned man, and he decided that he was going to change his skin color to a very dark color. Now, changing his skin color meant that he would need to undergo some significant changes, obviously, so one of the things that he did was to see a dermatologist and let the dermatologist know that he wanted to change his skin color. Changing his skin color also meant that this fellow was going to expose himself to a heat lamp. I'm not sure how long the process lasted. I believe it was for at least several weeks, likely several months. But he spent up to 15 hours every single day under a heat lamp. And then, along with the work of the dermatologist, the 15-plus hours a day under the heat lamp, he began to take some very large doses of a very potent drug so, again, he could darken his skin. After this man successfully altered his appearance, he decided the next step in his plan was to start traveling through several southern states where racial segregation was especially bad. He did that. He began to go to places like Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas, and Georgia. This journalist wanted to feel what it was like firsthand to be discriminated against because of skin color. And if you were to go back and look at the life of this man, you would find that he constructed a journal that's 188 pages long. And that information in that journal was then later used to produce the movie. As Griffin carried out his plan, the story about him, which is true, tells us that he did not change his name, he did not change his identity. If people saw Griffin, if people interacted with Griffin and said, "Who are you? What are you doing? And what's this all about?" he told them the truth. This man was an investigative reporter, and he got to experience firsthand what it was like to be discriminated against back in about the 1950s. Eventually, because of what this man did, he had to flee to Mexico for his safety. 3 years after this man's book was published, he was beaten by some members of the KKK and left for dead. Now, the information that I gave you about this fella is a good illustration, but just one of many illustrations, about how race has had a significant impact on our world. Today's lesson is about race, in some respects. It's from John chapter 4, and if you want to be turning over there, that will help set the stage for today's material. As you're finding John chapter 4, let me express my appreciation for the invitation to come. Not everybody certainly shows up for the first lecture of the day, the first couple, but since you've chosen to come out today, thank you for your presence. Two, for those who have helped make this day possible in a variety of ways, whether you cleaned the building, did some work outside, you provided food or something else, thank you very much. There's clearly preparation that is necessary to get the day going, and then there's some cleanup afterwards. Now, as you look at John chapter 4, you find that there are about 30 verses for today's study. And my assignment is to take these 30 or so verses and relate them to the theme that's already been introduced, and that is helping others in the great time of need. It's my goal, it's my intention to deal with that assigned theme from John 4 and deal with it by taking 12 practical points from the text. The first practical point comes from John chapter 14 and verse 6, and I would sum it up by the word exhausted. John said that Jesus at this time in his life was weary. Now, if you are probably at least 10 years old, you know that there is a difference between tired and
tired.
Some of us have been in the tired category. When you're in the tired category, there is that kind of weariness where you want to sit down at the first available opportunity. You don't care about finding a comfortable chair. You don't care about finding a comfortable spot. You want to flop down at the first possible or first available place. When we are totally spent, when we are completely unprepared, perhaps it is then that someone comes into our life, someone calls, someone texts, someone knocks on the door, and as we are in that state of mental or physical exhaustion, someone says to us, "I need help." And not only do I need help from you, the person who is completely exhausted. Now, maybe it's not complete physical exhaustion. You ever been in a time in life where you had some unexpected bills? Most of us, I think, have. And unless you're just sitting on a tremendous amount of money, maybe you were at a point where you're thinking the rent's going to be due in a couple days. The house payment's going to be due tomorrow. And as perhaps you were struggling to come up with the money for that, or maybe you were a little short on grocery money, or thinking about how we're going to make the payment for the car this month, whatever it was, someone came knocking on your door and said, I need some help. I need some money for a washing machine. My dryer went out, and I need a new dryer. Could you lend me $200, or whatever it might be? Or it might be that someone else comes to us after we have put in a long and exceptionally difficult day, and they say, we need some help. Could you help me pull out this tree? Or could you help me do this, that, or the other thing? Or there's this one. You've been sick, and maybe nobody knows. And a person calls you up, and they say, I need some help. And I've called everybody that I know, and nobody can help me. And you are my last person to contact. Could you help me? And you've just been vomiting all day. People sometimes need help from us when it's not convenient. Now, what do we find in John chapter 4? Did the Lord say, oh, I've had a bad day. I'm weary. I'm worn out. I'm tired. I'm too exhausted to help. No. Did he say, my disciples are away, and when they come back, I'm going to use them to assist you? No. Is it not true, John chapter 4 and verse 6, that Jesus helped this woman when he was about given out, when he was weary? Yes. We might have times in our life where someone comes to us, it is their great time of need, and we also have a need. It might be the case that our need is even greater than their need. Imagine the kinds of things that I mentioned earlier, and still being willing to help. That's the model of Jesus. Lesson 1 from John 4 is this. Helping others in the great time of need does not mean that it's going to be easy or convenient for us. Second point from John chapter 4, here we go. And that is, the people who have a great need, they may not be like us. Jesus was a man. The person he helped was a woman. The Lord was a Jew. The person that he helped was a Samaritan. Now, if you know anything about the Jews and the Samaritans, you know that there was a history of about 500 years between these two people, and that 500 or so year history was a history of non-cooperation and hostility. A person that needs great assistance, a person who has a time of great need, they may be totally, completely unlike us in a lot of different ways. There may be a language barrier. They may be different in terms of social class. They may be different in terms of their age, their likes, their gender, their religion, and even their citizenship. But in John chapter 4, Jesus shows us, by dealing with this woman who is a Samaritan, help people in their time of great need, even if they are not a lot like us. If Jesus, the Son of God, was willing to come down to our level, then certainly there is no bridge that we should feel that's too great to cross when someone needs assistance. Differences, even the most radical differences, should not be a basis for refusing help to those who need it. Lesson 3. This lesson may be summed up by the word helpers. In John chapter 4 and verse 8, we find that the Lord had some disciples, and these fellows had gone off to purchase some food. The next time that someone needs assistance, we might be thinking, well, yes, we understand that your need, we understand your need, but we know that some other people, it would be helpful to have some assistance. It would be helpful to have some others who can come along and aid us so that you get the help that you need. Well, in some cases, assistance might be helpful. Assistance might be necessary, but for whatever reason, they might not be available. Even in cases where we might want someone or need someone to assist us in helping meet the needs of another, we can still likely do something if no one else is available. People sometimes contact us for assistance, and we recognize after the need has been stated that we cannot fully address or meet their needs. Sometimes the need is beyond our ability to help. If we are honest in assessing a need, we might say this is beyond even the ability of the congregation that we're with to assist you. But God has not asked me, He's not asked any of us, to solve every problem that someone has. And I think that's a great relief to me. That should be a great relief to all of us. While we can't solve every issue that a person may have, generally it's the case that we can do at least something. If someone is suffering, if someone has received some bad news, at least we can take some time to listen to them. If someone has a great need, at least we can take some time to pray with them and offer some encouragement. It might be when a person has a great need that we can offer some type of temporary solution, perhaps to lighten the individual's load. We may lack other helpers, John chapter 4, but that does not mean that we are somehow powerless. John chapter 4 and verse 9 brings us to our next lesson. This is going to be lesson number 4. In that ninth verse, the text says, the Samaritan woman saith therefore unto him, how is it that thou, being a Jew, askest me, a Samaritan, for Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. This was part of that 500-year history between the Jews and the Samaritans, which was not favorable. When people have a great need, they may not, as they communicate that need to us, respond very well to what we do, say, and offer. If, as someone communicates the great need to us, we are somehow rebuffed in what we respond with, don't be surprised, don't be put off. Trying to help someone and having our offer not received very well can be distressing. Jesus has that experience in John chapter 4. And sometimes when people make an offer to assist someone, that offer is not received very well, a person can get huffy, they can get angry, they can get indignant, or they can get self-righteous. Jesus had that kind of experience, and he didn't quit. He didn't say, well, I'm not going to have anything to do with you. You are not grateful, you're not interested in what I have to offer, and I'm already tired, so just go your way and leave me alone. When we try to help people who have a great need, and all of us will likely do that at some point in our life, be prepared for some type of rejection. Our assistance may not always be welcomed, it may not always be accepted, but we can still try to help. Lessons 5 and 6 are going to be based on John chapter 4, verses 10 and 11. In verse 10, Jesus made it clear to the Samaritan woman what he was trying to give, but she didn't understand the offer that he was making. Jesus said, if you knew the gift of God, the indication is the Lord was trying to give her something that was very valuable, something that she really needed, but she wasn't quite getting it. Last year, there were two people in the 20s who contacted me and asked if I would perform their wedding. The young man, we baptized him about 3 years ago, and he didn't stick with the gospel. The young woman that he was with was from a denominational background. Now, I think when they contacted me and said, would you do the wedding, they were expecting an immediate yes or no answer. But I said, let's meet, and let's talk about some things. Over the years, my policy has been to marry two Christians or two non-Christians. I do not believe that a marriage between a Christian and a non-Christian is sinful. I just do not want to tie those wedding knots. So, we get together, and as we talk about a few things, I ask the young lady if she likes to read, and she says, yes, I love to read. I said, well, that's good. I have this book called Muscle and Shovel, and I would like you to read this book, and then we can talk again. Well, she gave me kind of a strange look, like, what kind of crazy preacher are you? I came here wanting to know if you're going to marry us. Give me a yes or give me a no. Not give me a book. But she didn't press the point. She said that she would read the book. A few weeks passed, and I hadn't seen much of them at services, so I sent her a note and said, have you read the book? And she said, no, I've been busy. Okay. A few more weeks passed, and I sent her another note. Have you read the book? Nope. Few more weeks pass, and I send her another note. Have you read the book? No. Now we are less than 4 weeks from the wedding, and I have not committed to doing it or not doing it. I'm still on the fence. And I sent her another note. I said, we need to meet, and soon. Well, they showed up. And I asked the lady, I said, did you read any of the book? And she said, yes. I said, well, how far did you get? She said, well, I got to that information about baptism. And then I stopped. I said, well, okay, I'm thinking we're making some progress here. I said, why did you stop? She said, I got angry. I was mad because her conversion experience didn't line up with what we found in the book. Well, we talked about the anger that she had. And I baptized that young lady the night we sat down and talked and then married them last month. You see, when we start talking to people when they have a time of great need, they may not always understand what we're trying to communicate. John chapter 4 and verse 10. And John chapter 4 and verse 11, as we try to help people when they have a time of great need, they may offer some resistance. This woman did. But when you have people who have a great need, and as they resist and perhaps as they have a lack of understanding, persist. A lack of resistance does not necessarily mean failure. A lack of understanding also does not necessarily mean failure. In the case of this young woman, she was an honest lady. She just needed a little help. So don't be surprised, don't be put off if there are people in your life who, when you try to help them, they offer some resistance. Moving on to verse 15 in John chapter 4, we come to lesson number 7. The Samaritan woman was a lady who wanted a quick fix. If there was a thirst-quenching drink, I don't think they had Gatorade back then, but if there was a thirst-quenching drink which would eliminate the need for this woman to come and get water, this lady wanted it. Notice the word. She said, I have to come all the way hither. This is a significant trip, and I'm having to drag this water back for various reasons. If there is an easier way, this lady said, sign me up. When we think about people and the times in life when they have a great need, it's often true that people want a quick fix. They like the quick and the easy way out. But when people have a great need, we need to realize the need's probably great because there is no easy. There is no quick fix. Beware of quick fixes. Beware of the easy and adequate answers because they can sometimes be worse than the problem. Verses 16 to 18 in John chapter 4 provide us with the next lesson when it comes to aiding others in times of great need. Jesus said, in looking at this woman, that she had had five husbands. And not only had she had five husbands, the lady that she was living with at the time Jesus was speaking to her, that was yet another guy. When we deal with people who have great needs, we're probably going to find, as we uncover more about their lives and the situations that they're going through, that they might be, by our standards, immoral. Not only might they be immoral, they might be, by our standards, grossly immoral. We can find, as people have great needs and they begin to unfold the details of the life, that maybe they are, from our perspective, involved in the vilest, the most filthy, the most disgusting things when it comes to a lifestyle. Almost anyone can step in and help someone who has a very minor, a very basic, a simple need. It doesn't take much help to do that. But when we find the people who have great needs in life, oftentimes we're going to find people who, when it comes to sin, they're really immersed in it. If a person were simply struggling with greed and came to talk to us, we would probably look at that individual and say, well, that seems like a pretty clean sin to us, so to speak. But then we have one day perhaps the drug dealer, and he shows up and he begins to talk about his great need. Well, all of a sudden, we've moved from someone who was struggling with, in our minds, a pretty clean sin, and now a guy who, well, you know, you're pretty dirty by our standards. And then perhaps the next week someone comes, and after we learn what he's doing, well, we can kind of fill in the rest of the blank because he's even worse. Sometimes the people who have great needs are, in our estimation, terrible sinners. But if we're going to help those who have great needs, we need to realize that sometimes we'll get our hands dirty. We're going to deal with some people who are involved with some really bad stuff. As we look at the woman in John chapter 4, this lady from Samaria, you really find a lady, her whole life could take up the entire lectureship. Have a whole lectureship on the woman from Samaria. As we look at some details of her life, we find, for example, in verses 19 and 20, that this is a lady who was involved with some trickery. She was a lady who was somewhat crafty. She compliments the Lord on one hand, and then she turns right around on what she tried to do. She tries to ensnare Jesus in a long-standing religious controversy. When we find people who have a great need, do not be surprised if, for whatever reason, they do their best to perhaps test us, or maybe they do their best to deceive us, or do their best to trick us. When someone has a great need, it's not always going to be the case, but there are going to be times, perhaps, when they are a little less than honest. Be wise. Be wise. Not all are dishonest, but some are. Now, we have 3 points left, and point number 10 may be summarized by the word teach. The Samaritan woman clearly needed some help. And in John chapter 4, verses 21 through 24, we find that Jesus did his best to teach this lady. When people have a great need, receiving religious instruction may not be the first thing that is on their mind. Ideally, though, that when that person has that need, especially if we can partially or fully meet that need, we will also do our best to offer some kind of teaching, especially if that individual is a non-Christian. Sometimes the people who we try to teach, they're spiritually dull or they are unlearned in the spiritual realm. In verse 22 of John chapter 4, Jesus says to this woman, you worship. He recognized that she worshiped, but he said, you worship that which you know not. One great need that a lot of people have is spiritual ignorance. Now, when they come on our door and they say, well, I need this, or I'm having a problem over here, they're likely not thinking about their spiritual need. But each year, it seems like in our country, spiritual ignorance is on the increase. Point 11, and this is sad. It comes from verse 27. Jesus' disciples finally come back to where the Lord is with this Samaritan woman. As you look at the reaction of Jesus' disciples in John chapter 4, it's not a reaction which we would say is commendable. These men apparently didn't say anything to the Lord, but Jesus' actions shocked them. When we try to help people with great needs, we may not get a favorable reaction from our brethren. I'm not going to give some specific examples here, but as we try to help people in times of perhaps crisis, sometimes fellow Christians can be critical of our actions. About a year after Teresa and I became a Christian, we were living in the state of Montana. I received orders from the military to move to another state. That would be the state of Texas. We were very poor at the time. We moved in our pickup truck, and as we were loading our truck that night, about 7 o'clock, I guess, in the evening, there was a lady from the congregation where we had worshipped for about 9 months, and she showed up on our doorstep. And this sister in Christ, she didn't scream, she didn't yell, but she did verbally assault me for several minutes as we were trying to load our truck. I had, during the short time that we were there, tried to help some people. And somehow, what I did, stepped on the toes of this woman, so to speak, because of a work she was doing. I had no idea, really, of who she was, had no idea of the work she was doing, and even now, I have no idea as far as what my actions did to mess with anything that she was doing. But anyway, she wanted to come over and just read me the riot act and let me know that I had somehow messed up. So we left back there in 1983, confused, and now all these years later, I still have no idea what I did. But I did learn a little something from that. I learned that you try to help others in times of great need, even though that can get you in trouble. So if you're thinking, again, John chapter 4, the disciples of Jesus, they come back. They're apparently not too enthused with the Lord, seeing that he had taken time to deal with this woman, try to help her out, even if some people don't understand. Even if some people don't appreciate what you're trying to do, help them anyway. If we're willing to help others in a time of great distress and need, expect at least on some level success. I know that because of John chapter 4, verses 39 to 41. And from that city, many of the Samaritans believed on him because of the word of the woman who testified. He told me, she said, all the things that ever I did. So when the Samaritans came unto him, they besought him to abide with them and abide 2 days. And many more believed because of his word. Success. Look for people to help today, tomorrow, and throughout our remaining days.